Sometimes life feels out of our control. We get stuck in trauma, old patterns, and change feels out of reach. Sometimes it feels like fate. We want to help you break out of old, unhelpful patterns and become healthier. We're Fate Resilience, taking control of the outcome.
With licensed therapists, Jennifer Oxford,
Taylor Madsen,
Haley Mayer.
Well, guys, we have gotten to this point where we are discussing now kind of the, all right, what does growth look like after trauma? And we've talked about all these different traumatic events and all these different situations. And a lot of it, I'm looking at the list of what we've already covered. And a lot of this has been abuse-based and violence-based, but then the last couple ones have been ones that, you know, don't necessarily always have to be someone working towards us. They can be natural events that have happened, right? So I like the fact that we've kind of changed that dynamic. What I would say too is as far as what we're looking for with growth, we're going to go into a lot of just areas of growth. And I guess, Jen, where do we want to start when we're looking at this idea of after trauma events have happened, how do we want to grow?
So one of the things with post-traumatic growth is actually because a lot of people come after those traumatic events, they actually initially really struggle with this idea of post-traumatic growth because they're still in that process of coping, right? So post-traumatic growth comes after the coping. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to recognize, like, it's not an early experience. It comes later. So, right. In a lot of the research that you'll read about, they'll talk about an event. And then there's the initial, like, oh my goodness, what just happened to me? I have to like deal with that. And then what happens from that point in this theory is you move to one of two places. You even move into homeostasis and restores balance of, okay, life has returned to normal, you know, whatever normal was for you before the trauma. And the other way that you can go is into a transformational place where this has either transformed me, and the transformation can be negative. It can say, I have more stress. Things have gotten worse. They're harder. And the other one is that it can be a positive experience, which is where post-traumatic growth comes in. And so it's really important if people understand this. It's not like, oh my gosh, you just got attacked. Let's talk about post-traumatic growth. That's not when we talk about it. We talk about it later on as we're trying to reinvest in our lives and find that place. And maybe normal isn't even an option anymore. And if normal isn't an option, that's when we move into this transformational place.
What about, oh, sorry, everyone, I don't have a voice.
Well, you do. It just sounds like you've
sounds put it like through a gravel pit. Yeah. What about for people that are in chronically stressful or are living in trauma that's prolonged, like they're living at home with their abusers, either because they're a child or they're married to someone that's domestically violent? Can they work on these things or experience post-traumatic growth in those areas?
That's a really good question. So with post-traumatic growth, you can build in coping and you can build in some resilience. But one of the things they do talk about is that the difference between resilience, right, and or coping and post-traumatic growth is resilience is how we're dealing with it now. Post-traumatic growth is how has this changed us for the future? So for example, Taylor, in your experience, if I've been in a situation where somebody had betrayed me and I was able to create boundaries, right? We're going to go through the stress and coping of creating boundaries. And now I live a more boundaried life. That would be where the post-traumatic growth comes in. But the process of creating boundaries is what we call the coping, not the post-traumatic growth. So I would say that when they're actively in the crisis, we're not looking at post-traumatic growth. We're looking at it for it after the effect of, now that we're safe, we get to either move back to homeostasis or into one of these transformational experiences.
Not so, post is an operative word, after.
So if we can make this into layman's terms, that's where, I don't know about you, but I know my clients would be like, wait a second, can you just make that in simplest terms? You're saying homeostasis, you're saying you know, these kinds of things. Can you explain that on a more basic level, just for understanding with that?
Yeah. I'll give an example from my own life. A couple episodes, we talked about, you know, injury, and I had talked about how in my life we had experienced an injury, and there's all the stress and coping, and how do we deal with the, you know, not being able to physically move the way we were able to move. What happened is, because there was the coping allowed for recovery, we're now in that place of moving back to what's normal. Can we go back to what was normal before? And that is what homeostasis means, is just kind of normal functioning. And then versus, like, if we were to say, oh, you know what, I can't bend the way I used to, or I can't go longer distances. For example, I had a pulmonary embolism years ago, and it took years before I could breathe the same way. It was a long recovery experience. So I was in the process of moving into homeostasis for years. But it was never, because I did have the skills to move it back into a normal place, even though it took a long time, it wasn't considered post-traumatic growth. It was just considered moving into homeostasis, or into that more normal functioning. Mm-hmm. Where, for example, we've talked about, you know, traumatic brain injuries, or, you know, somebody has betrayed you or attacked you, and suddenly now you have this, I can't see the world the exact same way I saw it before. That's when you're going to move into, okay, well, you get to now that the world is transformed for you, we can move it into that. Is it a negative transformation for you, or can we help build a positive transformation process for you? Does that help a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
So what does it take to be able to do that? Does it happen naturally, or is it something intentional?
Really, really great questions, because the truth is that some people are more predisposed. So there's a couple factors. There's some personal things that can say whether we're going to move into a more positive post-traumatic growth, and there's some external factors. And we can, through therapy, build these things, right? So this is not a, like, oh, whatever hand you were dealt in life, that just is. This is something, because we talk about the growth process, for a lot of people, they're saying, oh my gosh, I'm struggling so much. We can actually see them start to develop some of these personal factors specifically. And we can teach them to have the better external factors. So personal factors, optimism, right? Do you have a generally positive outlook on life? Can you see the potential for growth? Could be something. And this can be a big part of doing your trauma work, right? Because we've all seen people who come in and they're stuck in that fear state, and then they can move past that and they can move into a more optimistic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one of you could share, like, an experience of optimism that you've seen through trauma work.
I think off the top of my head, that's a hard one. Mainly because, I mean, yes, we do have good optimistic moments. And I think it's also really good for listeners to know, like, there aren't really always just ready-made optimistic moments to pull from, because I think a lot of people think, like, you know, oh, if I'm really working on my trauma work, or if I'm really getting help, then I'm going to have all these optimistic moments and they're going to happen more often. And I think it's also important just to state, like, sometimes the optimism is just the fact of, like, someone is validating the fact that this is trauma, and that's the only thing you get optimism from, if that makes sense. It's the idea of, it's not that all of a sudden I feel better about it, or that I can see that my equilibrium is happening sooner, or that I can go back to how things are going. I think the first step of trauma work, and unfortunately, trauma work can be a really long process.
I think we're confusing the word optimism, and I don't know if I didn't explain it well. Mm-hmm. So optimism is this belief that I can move forward. So for example, we'll go back to the term boundaries, right? So we've all taught people who have had no boundaries, we've taught them boundaries, and their awareness that they need boundaries often comes from traumatic experiences. So what we've then done is we'll say, okay, here is the belief, and they'll say, I don't have any boundaries, I'm, like, never going to be safe. And then what happens is we start to teach skill, and they start to say, I can be boundaried in this place. I can give myself permission to speak my truth and be more authentic. And even that belief of I'm capable of doing something, I'm capable of growth, is where optimism would come in.
Well, I think along with that, though, kind of with what I'm saying is a lot of people, like, it takes them a really long time to recognize that they can get to that point. So I think that there's like a really long intro process to even get to that point of saying, I can see that things are going to change and things are going to be like that. And so I think the first part about it is recognizing that there is a lot of people don't have one of these events and then immediately go into a feeling of it's going to change and it's going to be like that. It can take years, and it could actually take like a long process of therapy to eventually get to that point. That might be, at least for me, when I work with clients and individuals and friends and family and whomever, if I'm talking to them, sometimes it takes them just a very long time to grasp the point of something really bad happened and it can go back to a better place, right? A lot of them think like there's no way, there's a lot of shame involved, right? There's a lot of things going into it and saying like, you know, I can never be the same because of A, B, and C. And so I think that that's a lot of work. And then when they do eventually get to it, I think one of the people that I've worked with, when they get to that point of recognizing that things can be different.
After we've learned to cope comes the optimism. What happens once we start to gain skill is then we move into, okay, do we have the factors of, do I even believe in myself? Once I've reduced the stress and I'm past active PTSD symptoms.
I guess I'm looking at the stress scenario rather than the coping, because the stress is the idea of like, right, things even, because coping I feel like would have some resolve more than just being in the
center. Right.
So we have something traumatic happen, like we've been covering in the last several episodes, and that creates a host of stressful things. I mean, stress in like the physical sense. You feel fear, you feel anxiety, you have trouble sleeping, you lose your appetite, you have a really heightened, you want to eat more, all those kinds of things that we talk about stress in our day-to-day life and how we handle stress. And so then we go to coping. We're trying to just keep our head above water. Like, are we able to eat? Are we able to go to work? Are we able to go to school? Are we able to keep the kids fed? Those kinds of things. And once we get out of crisis, whatever it might be, like maybe someone was injured, maybe someone passed away, maybe we were really ill for a long time. Once the crisis is passed, once we no longer need to be coping with whatever is going on, we're no longer trying to keep our head above water, that's when we're able to take stock with what do we have going for us well outside of ourselves, and what internal qualities do we have. They're excellent. Like, we're optimistic. We're able to regulate our emotions well. We have a strong connection to our higher power. Those kinds of, then we're ready to move into a kind of work that's called post-traumatic growth. Is that what you're talking about, Jen?
Yeah. And I really appreciate kind of going to that place, because when we try and measure growth before we have stabilized, it actually can make us feel hopeless. It can actually create a lot of fear of, I'm never going to move forward, I'm never going to get better. And it is not the first stage. It's really important to know that those stages that Taylor talked about of stress and coping are their stages that take time. If you're actively managing a trauma trigger, you're not ready yet to do this work. Focus on actively managing it. Focus on doing your work. But there will come a point where we will get to either moving into homeostasis, or we'll move into returning to a normal place, or we'll need to transform what normal looks like for us.
I know I've worked with a lot of clients that come in just chomping at the bit to do trauma work. And they're only sleeping 2 hours a night, and they're maybe having a granola bar every day. And I really appreciate the enthusiasm. I'm enthused with them. And we've got to be able to sleep and eat before we can do heavy trauma work.
Yeah. And it's not because we're like, you're not ready yet because you're not good enough. We're looking at it and saying, from just, let's pull out, you know, you guys have heard about basic needs, right? Like, if those basic needs aren't getting met, you know, with your kindergartner, you know, with your high schooler, if they aren't getting enough sleep and they haven't eaten anything yet, or if it's a younger kid and they need a nap, there's no way you're going to talk to them, right? There's just, it's not going to happen. And it's the same thing with someone with trauma work. It's about saying there was a deficit, right? There was deficit in some way of safety, of feeling comfortable. And if we don't have those basic things being met, it's the same principle, except you're doing it to yourself. You're not having a parent telling you that you need to go do those things. So it makes it a lot harder because you think, oh, I can get through this quicker. It'll be fine. But your body's being that one who's saying, nope, you really need this. And so I've had clients get angry. I know, Taylor, you have. Jen, I'm sure you have too, of just getting angry of saying like, I want to jump in and I want to do this. And often it's because they've been told they need to do trauma work, their spouse or their friend or their partner or past therapist, you know, whomever it is saying, you need to get this done. And they're like, well, I need to get it done. And it's like, you can't get it done on an empty fuel tank. Right.
Well, and going back to the terms that we're using, like if you're saying my life is actively stressful because of this trauma, what you're saying is I want the stress to stop. That is a process. Reducing stress after a trauma is a process. Coping with the effects of the trauma is a process. So if we go through this, it's not until we've done those things, until we can start looking into, okay, will life return to normal or will we have to transform our normal?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, Taylor, you've not to like call you out, but like you've had a lot of health trauma that we've talked about in the past, right?
We've talked about it. Yeah. On this,
yeah. So and what we're saying is Taylor is not normal, right?
Yeah. Well, his new normal doesn't look like it was before, right?
It's not.
Just as all of us, right? Just as all of us, whether it be because of relationship trauma, because of a death, because of different things like that. I mean, just look at something typical. We have some holidays coming up in the summer. We also have Easter coming up, things like that. You know, traditionally, that's like a family holiday. People will get together. If someone's passed away and there's a death trauma that's happened within the family, that normal looks different. Maybe we can't go to mom and dad's house because one of them's passed, or maybe they have to come to our house because they're, we can talk about also just health traumas of just saying like they're, I have a couple clients who their parents are starting to, you know, go through some memory issues and are starting to have some really hard health issues of being older. And there's a bit of a trauma that they're having to work on of just recognizing like, what is the new normal, right? And so with what we're talking about, when it comes to this growth aspect, they don't just sit there and go, well, it's not going to happen anymore like that. So we're not doing it, right?
I love that. As you talk about it, I think about this, working with this family who's currently going through the stress coping processes. And one of the things they say sometimes is, well, we always imagine life would look like XYZ, right? We tried to create this type of family life. And I said, you may still get there. You may still get to X, Y, and Z. It may not be this year that you get there. We have to meet ourselves in the stress and in the coping skills if we're ever going to get to anything that is normal or even a new normal. Mm-hmm. And again, that rush towards normal or a new normal is often far too quick. And we want to know that this idea of growth after trauma is very possible, but not, it doesn't happen when you push it too fast. It only happens if you go through those steps of ignoring the stress that trauma caused, and then working on coping with that stress and reducing the amount it's impacting your life, and then figuring out what is normal or new normal look like.
I experienced post-traumatic growth when we've worked on it. We tend to grow in five areas. We have a greater appreciation for life. We'll relate to others differently or better. Namely, we'll generally be more empathetic or compassionate. We'll have greater personal strength. We'll see new possibilities, and we'll have greater spiritual growth, however you define spiritual growth.
Like, yeah, connection with higher self, connection with just being able to, often spiritual growth with that, we'd be looking at the idea of how do we connect with the higher thought process and to get ourselves out of a traumatic event, right? Something bigger than ourselves.
Another term that they use around the spiritual growth is existentialism. Who am I in this world and how do I fit into the larger whole is another part of that.
And so spiritual growth doesn't demand a belief in a higher power.
I think it's really interesting to see that post-traumatic growth can happen in different areas. And for some people, it doesn't happen in all five, and it's not the same thing. And even, you know, again, when we do get to start looking at post-traumatic growth, I think it's really important to see that even 1% improvement would be considered a transformation. Even, you know, sometimes we think I'm 100% different. Most people don't end up 100% different after events. Mm-hmm. Most people end up either in either transformation towards a more positive growth place, or even towards a more stress state that seems normal. And so we want to make sure you understand that this is not going to be like, oh, well, before my trauma, I was like,
able to run marathons and do all these different things, and I was involved in all community events and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now post-traumatic growth might be when I go to a community event, instead of being more gregarious, I'm more connected to people and I stop and slow down a little bit.
The study concluded that post-traumatic growth doesn't exist because people aren't more outgoing, they're not more extroverted. Essentially, their personality doesn't change.
Right.
And I think that was a really terrible study, because that was a really poor definition of personality or post-traumatic growth. Because post-traumatic growth doesn't tell us that our personality will change. Mm-hmm. We'll just be stronger and more who we are.
I love that, because that move towards authenticity versus like improved skill is a really important part of how we want to measure this type of growth. A couple things to know just about post-traumatic growth as you're looking at it is that post-traumatic growth is something that stabilizes over time. Again, it's your new normal, the new way you look at things, the new way you interact with people, the new way you see your interaction with either a higher power or with the world around you, is something that stabilizes. Means it's not going to be just for a year or two. It actually moves into the long-term effects of your life. Another thing to be aware is that being open to post-traumatic growth is something that actually propels you in that process. So if you say, I want this to make me more authentic and more connected, or change my view of spirituality or those kinds of things, that will actually move you into it. It's important to understand that the younger we are, the more malleable we are. We've talked about that in other ways. And so younger people are more likely to see more significant post-traumatic growth experiences. So late adolescents, early adults are very open to this versus older children. One of the things that I'll say about younger children and post-traumatic growth is because younger children are, their belief system and their normal isn't stabilized yet, we don't actually see it and measure it in children the way we would in an adult. And so it's not that children don't grow and learn from experiences. It's about how they grow and learn from experiences being part of their developmental place. And so post-traumatic growth is seen more as a young adult and older experience. They do have some research about children and post-traumatic growth now in some really significant events. But just be aware of, we don't look at it and say, this is necessarily, there's parts of growth and change that are a normal part of development, is what I want to say.
It's also this idea too, you mentioned a good point of that, of like, if we're talking about value systems and things like that, kids haven't developed their own yet. They're, mm-hmm. you know, they're very much based off of the, I'm doing a mindfulness training on Wednesday nights with the University of Utah. And they were mentioning with value systems as a child, when it comes to like learning why we want to be grounded and why we want to be mindful and things like that, that's a lot of based off of our values. And as a kid, we very much like a lot of societal things, whether it be religion or whether it be just groupings or things like that, or community, collectiveness, we value those things as a kid because we're taught to value those things. It's not because we've had our own experiences. And that's totally a normal and great thing of development. So when we're talking about this whole idea of traumatic growth in a child, they haven't been able to evaluate their value systems and then grow on those. And so we may not see some marked improvement in the same way as we would see an adult, or a marked understanding of what we see. We see someone who kind of just, kids don't just float by, but they are just kind of going with the flow, and they're matching the energy that's around them, and they're trying to, work with that. you know, kids, whether they be human or even talking about like animals or things like that, all younger organisms are taught to blend in a safety tactic, right? Kids are taught to model their parents. You see even cubs in the Sahara are taught to blend into the background. And those are safety habits so that because they aren't old enough to create their own standard, their own way of working on things. And so when it comes to this idea of post-traumatic growth within children, it's not the fact that they aren't getting it. It's the fact that that's part of their just origin of how they react, is they are supposed to blend in. So we're focusing more on the idea of adults because they're the ones who flush out and look at and align themselves with specific values. And that's how they break apart and sometimes have those values feel like they've been broken, is because that they're very specific to them. But with kids, you may see, we call it resilience sometimes, but it's honestly, they're taught from a younger age and they've been programmed from a very young age to just go with the flow. So that way they can just get what they need to be able to survive and then be in a safe space to organize their own thoughts about that as they get older.
Haley, I feel so validated by that because I know that if I look back at who I was as a teenager, I think that person really confuses me now, but I can say I was not fully formed. I hadn't fully developed. And so I think a lot of people can look back at themselves and say, yeah, as a kid, I didn't have a full identity, so I couldn't become more authentic. Mm-hmm. You know, where other people might say, well, kids are really resilient, meaning they can learn. Yes, they're very teachable. That is different than what we're talking about with post-traumatic growth. And mm-hmm. I think you did a really good job of explaining that.
Yeah. And I would even challenge it too, because nowadays I hear people saying that kids are more resilient on their own, right? That they don't need to blend with their families. I think it's more that they are now realigning to blend in with the culture and blend in with their peers. So it's less about blending in with their families and trying to go along with the flow and kind of be able to like be protected through the family unit. They're looking more at being able to be there. They're finding a new alignment with what you're talking about with their friends. So they may seem like they're outsiders, or that they are so, you know, autonomous and they're doing all these things, but really they've just found a different place to blend in with. It's just not the family that they're around or the people who they're in their home site. They're blending in with the peers and the society, and that's where they're finding safety.
I also know that children are the least resilient of us because their brain is still developing, and so they're the most susceptible to trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's, they also don't think about themselves. The term is metacognition, thinking about their own thoughts. And so a lot of post-traumatic growth comes in what Haley was talking about in change in values, goals, or even belief about self, and children don't have those yet.
And that's one of the last parts of the brain to develop.
Correct. And so as you understand this and you look about it, I think we've had a really good discussion of what post-traumatic growth is, but also understanding that it's not the same thing as healing from trauma. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Annie's laughing at my godmother impression.
I know. Yes. I give you this gift. Oh, I love that you're bringing that up too, Jen and Taylor, about just resiliency and just what that looks like. And I think just understanding as an adult what you're capable of doing, it's not so much to be like, you know, let's just focus on the kids, let's do that. But it's also the idea of like focusing on the whole gambit of where do you fit with it? What's the myth behind if you can get through this trauma? What's the actuality? What does it look like for you? Also, a majority of these things we already talked about are things you go through if you're a parent with your children. So it's just knowing about all the things around you and what's going on. And even Jen and Taylor and myself, when we've mentioned our own past history of these kinds of things, it's about looking at it and saying like, oh, like, because that was a family thing. That makes sense. So, yeah.
Yep. I love it. Well, We're going to be talking about post-traumatic growth and some different goals and processes that we can work on over the next couple episodes. So please join us for that.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please feel free to rate, subscribe, and review. And if you want to find us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fate Resilience. We'd love to hear from you.